relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka, welcoming our very special guest host, the founder of Young Americans Against Socialism, Morgan Zegers.
Okay, oh my gosh. Hi, guys. Hello, everybody. I know I don't sound like Dr. Gorka. Okay, I am filling in for him today. My name's Morgan Zegers, and I run a nonprofit organization called Young Americans Against Socialism. So, as you can imagine, that put me in similar paths with Dr. Gorka one day. And ever since, we've been quite fun friends. And every time we post pictures together on the internet, people ask what height he is and what height I am. I'm 5 feet tall. He's 6'3". I have a feeling he's going to have some height jokes for me later on. But to everybody out there, I hope that you'll give me a chance today. I know I'm not Dr. Gorka, but I have some interesting lessons and some interesting guests, including a congressman and some of the best youth leaders in the conservative movement right now that are leading the way and fighting back against this nasty, nasty culture that my generation is for some reason accepting and embracing, not just accepting, but full on loving it. First, I want to give you guys a good background and a good lesson on what the heck is going on with my generation. I'm 25. I just turned 25 a couple days ago. Ugh, I feel a little old saying that, but I was told I can't say that by some of the people behind the camera. But I turned 25 a couple days ago, and that means that I am either the last year of millennials or the first year of Gen Z. Half the time, it's one or the other. You never know these days. It's always changing. But that gives me a really unique perspective because I grew up with no phones, and then the flip phone came, and next thing you know, the iPhone came around by the time I'm in middle school, and now you can't walk 10 feet without seeing a toddler with an iPad that can't get its face out of that screen. And so things have changed a lot from the time that I was a kid to now being a young adult and trying to make it in America, and I'm seeing my generation just go completely awry. And that's really what set me off onto this path, what got me into politics. And I want to explain what happened with my generation to everybody out there that's either really frustrated because they see what my generation is saying on those viral videos online, what they see what we're doing on TikTok, they see what's happening on college campuses, and they see what we're posting on Twitter, which is, I think, a cesspool. Now, it all goes back for me this one moment when I was in college. So to give you guys some background of why this was such a big moment for me, I'm from upstate New York. Now, I'm in New York City right now at one of these radio stations for Gorka so that I can guest host this. And I never go to New York City. I'm from upstate New York. There's more cows than people in my county. I'm a very rural person, I guess you could say, and I can't wait to homestead one day. So I'm a little out there, if you know what I mean. I can't wait to live off grid. But I'm down here in the city willing to, you know, venture into this little land of liberalism and leftism just for this specific show. And when I was raised in upstate New York. I was raised in a military family. My dad's a colonel in the military, served at 9/11. Actually, he drove down here with me, and he pointed out the places where he was on 9/11 as they were helping to clean everything up, and where his military unit was to do that. And then he also served in Operation Iraqi Freedom. And so I didn't grow up in a very political family, and a lot of people assume that that's what it was. A lot of people think, oh, I messed up. My kid's a liberal now because I didn't raise him in a political family. But I always want everybody to know, my parents never pushed politics onto me. They pushed gratitude onto me and a love for history. And that is really why I became a conservative. So thank you to my mom and dad for doing that to me. And I hope everybody out there knows that you can make becoming a conservative a very fun process. We are not heartless. I think conservatives are actually more compassionate than the other side. And it's because we care about others, we have high expectations of others, and that is because we love them and care for them and want the best for them. Now, coming from upstate New York, from that military family, and I mean upstate New York, like the Saratoga battlefield, turning point of the Revolutionary War location, that's where I grew up. And so when I go to college, I thought I was kind of continuing that path. And it's because I wanted to go to veterans. I wanted to go into veterans advocacy when I graduated. And so I went into veterans advocacy by getting a degree at American University in Washington, D.C. It was a degree in communications, law, legal institutions, economics, and government. And I mean, American University. What a cool name, right? You would think that I'm about to go to the most patriotic school in the country, our nation's capital. How exciting would that be? But no, that is not what happened at all. I quickly learned that American University, once I got there, it was actually the most politically active campus in the country, and it was 90% liberal. And so it was a big difference for me than my upstate New York growing up experience, my childhood there, my military family. I mean, we live on the top of a mountain, and again, there's more cows than people in my county. So to go to American University was quite the change for me. And I had all the weird experiences that you can imagine. I mean, the professors that told me that Republicans and conservatives were only Republican and conservative for two reasons. We don't like people of other colors. We only like white people. We're racist. And then, of course, there's all the Republicans that are evil down by the South, and that's by the border, and we don't like immigrants. And so those were the two reasons my professor taught us that we voted a certain way. How evil is that to teach an entire classroom of kids? And then when you think of that in one college campus, but then expand that to how many states and how many college campuses across the country are we seeing that kind of indoctrination? But that's a whole other story. So I had a bunch of weird situations like that. I mean, I remember my orientation day. I had never heard the words bigot or xenophobe or misogynist before until my first day of college, where we had diversity and equity training. Have you guys heard of that? And that was, I think, 5 years ago at this point. It was years and years ago, and it was just coming on the scene. And look how fast everything's changed in America, where now people are saying that they can just make up any gender or any pronoun that they want. But that's where I first learned these words of diversity training and everything that the left is now using to divide us with their cultural Marxism tactics. And of course, one of the worst stories was when they advocated for a segregated cafe on my campus. Now, I tell you all this so that you understand, like, college is a weird experience for most average Americans these days. But what really set me off and what started my journey into what I do now, I run the nonprofit Young Americans Against Socialism. It was the moment I walked into a house off campus that I was moving into my last year. It turns out my roommate had a poster that just kept catching my attention as I'm trying to talk with her, trying to get introduced to her. I'm trying to respect her with eye contact, but I keep looking to the overside of the wall, and I'm wondering, why is this drawing my attention? And then I realized it's because I recognized the men on a poster on her wall. It was Mao Zedong, Lenin, Stalin, Karl Marx, and Fidel Castro. The poster said, "Welcome to the party." And these mass murderers and dictators that were on my roommate's wall had these party hats on, and they had these fruity little cocktail umbrella drinks. And I looked at her, and I had no idea what to say. No idea what to say. And so I just looked at her and I said, "What's that?" "What is that?" And she looked at me with the biggest smile on her face, and she said, "Oh, I'm a communist." And from then on, you guys, you would think that Little Miss Upstate New York, daughter of a colonel, served on Operation Iraqi Freedom, served at 9/11, you'd think I would know what to say when I met a communist, right? I'm a big history nerd, thanks to my parents. But no, I had absolutely no idea what to say to a communist with mass murderers and dictators on her wall that was giving me the same talking points that we hear all the time throughout the 20th century and from the leftists of America today, that her version of communism, if done right this time, because it's never been done right before, would bring equity for all, it would end poverty, it would support the working class and bring dignity to them, all the usual talking points. I had no idea what to say to somebody who was able to push that kind of rhetoric onto me. And it was such a disappointing moment. And so from then on, I was determined to make sure that my generation was equipped to handle those conversations. That's why I started my nonprofit. If you go to fightsocialism.org, you'll be able to watch all of the content, the educational and historical content that we make. And what we really love to do is interview survivors. So that's how I got connected to Dr. Gorka. And I'm just so thankful that he gave me this opportunity to talk with all of you guys for the next 3 hours. Are you excited or what? But if you look at what's going on in America today, you'll find that the numbers may look scary. 70% of my generation claims they would vote for a socialist. I'm going to change your mindset on this. I'm going to make sure that you understand this isn't a scary situation. This is all fixable if we do this correctly and if we act quickly. So that's going to be my focus. And what I will say, though, you guys, I'm excited, and I hope you guys start calling in. I'll share the number for that later, and we'll get talking.
Relief Factor. Have you tried every other form of pain relief only to fail and not find your answer? Well, try this incredible product that is providing liberation from pain to tens of thousands of Americans across the country, including Alicia from California. I'm a grocery store worker and have been working doubles during this coronavirus shutdown. At 52 years old, my two bad knees are not getting a rest. I literally limp to and from bed. 2 days into Relief Factor and the pain has decreased substantially. So thankful for this amazing product. That could be you. It should be you. Find out today the only way you can by ordering the 3-week quick starter pack at relieffactor.com. Call them at 800-500-8384. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening just like I do. And I promise you, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Alicia, and thousands of your fellow Americans. What have you got to lose except the pain? Do it today. 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com.
This is so exciting. I love the music. We'll have to tell Dr. Gorka that he does a good job planning all this. You guys, welcome back. This is Morgan Zegers. I am guest hosting for Dr. Gorka. He's out. I'm in. We're talking about socialism. We're talking about young America, because what the heck is going on with us, right? Now, I'm here to give you two lessons this segment that are going to really, really help you out when it comes to understanding what's going on with Gen Z and millennials. The first lesson, you guys, actually, let's do three lessons, because I just saw something on the news that came up that now the radical left is once again asking Biden to talk about canceling student loan debt, making college free, the usual yada yada Marxist crap. Now, what's happening there, I hope you guys understand. Let me tell you a story. When I was in my first ever job out of college, I worked at an advertising company in Boston. And it was one of those, you know, more liberal companies where nobody has like a solid desk. Everybody just sits in cafeteria style open seating because it's supposed to be hip and cool. You know what I mean? It's one of those companies. Now, that meant that you could pretty much hear everybody's conversations. So there's good and bad in that for working collaboration. But one of the positive things that I learned from all of it was the reasons why all of my lovely, more liberal coworkers were voting a certain way. And I could tell you this, it didn't go much beyond, oh yeah, well, this person said they're going to cancel my student loans, and I would really like that to happen because I feel hopeless with this. And it was just that. I was going to vote for Bernie because he says he's going to cancel my student loans. End of story. It doesn't really go deeper than that. Now, I find a lot of positivity in that situation, if you ask me. You could be a little depressed at the fact that somebody would make such a big decision for the leadership of our country based on something as shallow as that and such a bad decision that they personally made. But I find hope in it because it means that we're able to win them over. So that's the first lesson there, that this really isn't a problem of deeply rooted socialist overtakers that are taking over Gen Z and millennials. Instead, we're dealing with a small, radical group that does want to do things like seize the means of. They understand my generation is very, very ignorant on the politics and the history of this ideology, and they're preying on it. So I believe my generation deserves the truth. I believe if they had the truth, they would be on our side, because I hope to God that if they saw the basic facts and understood the basic facts, they would in no way want to repeat the 24 failed attempts of socialism and communism over the last couple centuries. Now, the big lesson there is for us to understand our enemy. If you've read Sun Tzu, The Art of War, you know this is a big lesson in the book. What he says is that if you understand yourself when you're battling, but you don't understand your enemy, you're going to have constant little tiny wins that feel good. Maybe you'll go viral, for example, on social media with a sassy video that makes fun of young people for wanting socialism, telling them ship off to Venezuela and never come back because they're ungrateful little twats. But are you really winning anybody over there? Are you having much of an impact other than suiting yourself with more social media positivity that makes you feel good on the inside because it releases the endorphins? Do you like that? Or do you want to have long-lasting, meaningful change in the country? And that will come by understanding who we are up against and who our potential enemies are. So here's what I'm looking at. There's a huge difference between a radical leftist, a seize-the-means-of-production style leftist, and a naive young person that was totally let down by the American public education government school system. Two hugely different groups, okay? So I look at a number I mentioned earlier in the last segment. 70% of young Americans, according to a 2019 YouGov poll, so this was before COVID, who knows what's going on now, 70% of people my age said they would vote for a socialist if they were given the option. And then in a YouGov, or no, and then in a Gallup poll, in 2018 and 2019, the numbers came out that, again, a majority of young people would choose socialism over capitalism if given the option. Now, you can look at that and be like, what the heck? We are screwed. Or you can look at that and say, all right, let's be honest. How much of that 70%, how much of that majority of young people really want to seize the means of production and nationalize major industry? Now, ask yourself, how many of that percentage even know what that word means, to nationalize or to seize the means of production? Do you think they've ever even heard that term before? Before COVID, when everybody started saying we needed to nationalize the industries to solve the health crisis, yada, yada, Bill de Blasio. I highly doubt that they've even heard that term before, and I highly doubt that they understand what it would mean, let alone want to do it. That's where I find a lot of positivity. And that's where we're able to separate the difference between a radical, like, I don't know, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's a member of the Democratic Socialists of America, a group that says they want to end private companies and private business corporations in exchange for publicly owned, worker-owned, collectively owned, you know, the usual yada yada crap that they always put out. There's a big difference between an AOC-style socialist, an economic socialist that has read it and wants to try it. Again, I call them flat earthers of economics, because how can you look at the 24 attempts and then say, let's try it one more time. I think it might work this time. And there's a huge difference between that and the young people of America that simply did not get a proper education on history, economics, ideology, government, civics, finance, let alone the very specific tragedies that happened in the 20th century. Okay? That's where I find positivity. If our generation got this information, I think we could win them over. Now, the other thing that I want you guys to understand, this is the big one. The left is able to make fun of us and win the argument of socialism when we call everything socialism. And so it's really important for us, knowing that our generation did not get a proper education on the terminology and the basic terms like socialism versus communism versus everything else. And so it's up to us to deliver them these basic truths. One of these things is that socialism is just the economic step of communism. It is the government taking over the major industries, controlling them, becoming the provider of those services and products. It's very dangerous because it creates a reliance. The people are now reliant on the government as the only provider of those things, and it means that the government can then say, okay, now we are going to force you to do X, Y, Z, or you are not getting this good or service. See how that works? So you're putting yourself in a very weak position. You're now dependent on one monopoly force, and they can pretty much force you to do whatever they want. That's why you see things like forcing people to do certain things on election day, what we see in Cuba, Venezuela, etc. Now, knowing that there is much more to the problem now than just the economic step of communism, I want you guys to make sure that when you talk to young people, you explain to them that socialism is just one of the problems. What we see today with the COVID mandates, with the force that we're seeing there, that's authoritarianism. That is authority telling you, forcing you to do something, not giving you the choice. And that is completely un-American. It's completely unprecedented. The next thing is totalitarianism, which is basically the elimination of any opposing thought, opposing viewpoint from the public square and from a position of power. And I want to talk about that later on. We're going to have some guests on to discuss it. But I want to talk to you about how college campuses, and now even elementary school, middle school, high schools, those are becoming, with college campuses, many little breeding grounds for totalitarians that then graduate and go off into the working forces. They go off into our government bureaucracy, our military, and the corporations, and they're bringing their radical ideas with them. So we've got to fix it. The guests will talk about that with us.
Whether it's the regular Hellcat or whether it's the compensated RDP with that miniature red dot, I love them all. How did it take so long to invent a factory compensated subcompact 9mm? Well, guess what? Springfield did it, and I'm a huge fan, and I'm Sebastian Gorka.
The Hellcat from Springfield Armory is still the smallest, highest capacity micro compact in the world. Available in standard or optics-ready configurations, the class-leading capacity of the Hellcat gives you 11+1 with the standard magazine and 13+1 with the included extended mag. The definitive concealed carry pistol is here. The Hellcat from Springfield Armory gives you the capacity to defend.
Portions of America First are brought to you in part by Prison Fellowship.
All right, you guys, welcome back. We have a very exciting guest that is on this segment. My very dear friend, Congressman Madison Cawthorn, is joining us, and we are going to talk about solutions, okay? Solutions in government and solutions in our own homes and our own lives, because I really do think when you have stronger individuals, it'll lead to strong families, strong communities, and a stronger country. Madison completely agrees with me on that one, and that's why I want him to provide some of his expert insight as a former homeschooled kid, now congressman at a very young age. So, do I have the congressman with me? Is he on yet?
Morgan, I'm on.
All right. Hi there. How you doing? What are you up to?
I'm doing fantastic. Just about to do an event for a dear friend of mine running for the Senate. So that's going to be great. But I cannot think of anyone better to be filling in for Sebastian Gorka than an equally passionate freedom fighter like yourself.
You're very sweet. Thank you very much for doing that. And thank you for sharing this time, because I have some important questions. I think it's going to benefit all of the people listening and watching. The first thing, with everything with COVID, you know, I've already asked you this, but we talk more privately. Everybody is wondering what the heck goes on in Washington, D.C., because we hear things, we hear promises, we work so hard to get candidates in office, and then we just feel forgotten. You have insight into this that we will never see. What do you want us to know about what is going on behind the scenes? And is there anything we can do on that big picture level that we can change? And then I want to get your opinion on some more personal changes that Americans can make.
Well, Morgan, as I'm sure most people listening to this phone call know, that there are always 435 members of Congress divvied up per capita in each state. When you start working with that many people, you know, they break it up to about 730,000 people represented by each member of Congress. I fully expected, and you can call it my youthful ignorance, that when I got to Washington, D.C., you know, I knew we were in the minority. I knew Nancy Pelosi would be in command. But I imagine that all 435 members would gather on the floor. We would all be there. And then, you know, let's say Nancy Pelosi would bring up, well, because of crumbling infrastructure in Indianapolis, we've got 43 Americans dying per day. What can the federal government do to assist in this help? And then we'd send our best orators. We'd send all our staff to go study. We'd sit there and we'd have a debate and be like, you know, I completely disagree with everything that you said except this one point. And then maybe I can add that to my point. And, you know, you'd find some great middle ground, the ways to actually help people. But the thing that is so sad is that whenever you watch me give, you know, a fiery speech on the House floor, I'm saying, Nancy Pelosi, you are not God. You then will notice that C-SPAN is very zoomed in on my face. They do this because they don't want to show the whole floor. They don't want to show that there's really only 10, 15, 20 members of Congress on the floor at a time. The decisions are all made very far away. They're made in places, you know, deep below the Capitol where there's no cameras, there's no public input. It's just the special interest groups. I think the Democrats might have a torture chamber where they get to convince everyone to vote for their radical policies. But it really is very sad that, you know, we don't get together and actually just debate the real issues.
Okay. And so speaking of that, I've interviewed a few people that are on the House Freedom Caucus. You just joined. Can you tell me why you did that? Can you explain to Americans out there what you guys are really all about?
Yes, indeed. So the House Freedom Caucus exists less so to defeat Democrats, more so to make sure that the Republican Party that we do have is one that Republicans can be proud of. We exist to push the party further to the right to make sure that all that we have the most conservative policies we possibly can. I did not join them at first, Morgan, because, you know, they were behind my opponent in the primary election that I went through. And so they spent like $4 million against me and all these things. And so, you know, just based on principle, I was like, oh, I'm not going to join your guys' ranks. It's ridiculous. But then, Morgan, I'll tell you, I had to put my personal pride aside when I realized how just disgusting it is, the politics that happen within this uniparty. So many people in Washington, D.C., they run on radically different platforms. I mean, you can look at George Bush and Barack Obama. I've learned this thing in Washington, that they're technically a part of the same party. They ran on very different platforms, but at the end of the day, all of their policies look almost exactly the same. How they portray them, you know, it seems very different. But when you actually look at the real meat of the issues and the legislation and the policies, you realize this uniparty exists. It's very powerful. And that's why I said, you know what? I'm going to join in with the House Freedom Caucus and try and defeat the establishment that's trying to destroy our country.
Jeez. No, I commend you quite a lot for taking the risk, because we don't know what's going on behind the curtain. You know what I mean? And so when we send average people out there like you, no offense, I love how you represent average America. I think it really benefits everybody because you can tell us what's going on and what needs to truly be reformed. And I know Chairman Andy Biggs works very, very hard for the House Freedom Caucus for that. Now, Madison, Congressman Cawthorn, I should say, sorry, I get so used to that. Stay tight because we are going to have a break and then we'll bring you back. Thank you so much.
All of you out there know that MyPillow doesn't have giant box stores or any shopping channels. They've been instead targeted by cancel culture, but now they want to pass on big savings directly to you. Get the lowest price in the history of MyPillow for their classic standard MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with my promo code. They also have queen-size pillows, regularly $79.98, now only $24.98 with promo code GORKA. Or king-size pillows, usually $89.98, now only $29.98 with my promo code. MyPillow is not just pillows. They have over 150 products, everything from sleepwear to actual beds. Promo code GORKA also works at mystore.com and frankspeech.com. Call today, 800-829-8468. That's 800-829-8468. MyPillow.com, promo code GORKA.
All right, welcome back, you guys. This is Morgan Zegers. I'm filling in for Sebastian Gorka here on America First. Now, we're going to get right back to my great friend, Congressman Madison Cawthorn. He's going to talk with us about some homeschooling and raising babies, all the great things. And he's going to tell us a little bit about what his mom did to make him so wonderful. But first, Dr. Gorka wanted me to remind you of a startling statistic. Nearly one-third of all annual charitable giving occurs in December, and 12% of all giving occurs in the last 3 days of the year. So that means you are right in that three-day window when many Americans just like you are planning year-end giving and they're looking for tax deductions. I know I am. All of us here on America First have told you all month about the awesome work of the nonprofit Prison Fellowship, the Angel Tree People. But they plan a ton of stuff, and it's coming up in 2022, and they need your help. We have left the Prison Fellowship banner up at the top of the homepage at sebgorka.com, so you can still grab a year-end tax deduction and make an eternal change in a prisoner's life with your tax-deductible gift to our friends at the nonprofit Prison Fellowship. So just go to sebgorka.com and click on the Angel Tree banner at the top of the page. You got to hurry, though. Your online gift at sebgorka.com must be posted by midnight on Friday to get credited for this current tax year. So race to sebgorka.com, click on the Angel Tree banner, and remember, your year-end gift today will help share the gospel with prisoners, ex-prisoners, and their children all year long. It's a great investment in a better America as we head into 2022. And now to kick off that same kind of topic, okay? What is a good, great investment to make in a better America, for a better America moving forward? I can't think of a better person to ask than Congressman Madison Cawthorn, an incredibly young and incredibly passionate and exciting congressman from North Carolina. Let's bring him back in. Madison, how are you doing?
Morgan, doing great. Again, very happy to be on. You're doing a great job in lieu of Sebastian Gorka being gone.
Thank you very much. Now, there's something that I know, and I think a lot of people in your life know, but a lot of people out in America don't know this, and they're starting to get woken up to the idea of homeschooling. You were homeschooled. And I think that is such a testament to the power of homeschooling, the fact that you were one of the many homeschooled children of America. Can you tell us how this came to be, what your parents decided for you, and what do you think you benefited from this experience?
Absolutely. Well, they made this decision very early on. You know, I was born in 1995, so really started, you know, doing the school thing in around 2000. And my mother had to make a decision. She said, you know, do I want to homeschool my child? Which it wasn't as mainstream as it is now back then. And she made a decision to do so. In part, it was because, you know, my mother really believed in the importance of masculinity and men being able to stand up and stop evil in its tracks and being able to fight back against the indoctrination that's happening. She started seeing this going on in our schools. And, you know, she said, I don't really want my child to be raised by, you know, other teachers 8 hours a day. And then he's got all his athletics after that. You know, there's no time that I could then pour into him the life lessons that he needs to have to be able to be successful. And so my mom made an incredible commitment, my mother and father, that they were going to raise, you know, Proverbs and push-ups. You know, it was reading all throughout the Proverbs, getting the wisdom from the Holy Word of the Bible. But also whenever you screwed up, you know, when it's your parents, they can make you do an ungodly amount of push-ups. And it's my dad always used to say, if you're going to be dumb, you're going to be strong.
Oh, geez, I love that so much. And you were telling me, too, your mom was able to fit in so many other lessons that kids that go through public school, kids that go through government school, you just don't get because your day is taken up by so much bureaucracy and shoving you through a certain cycle. Now, can you share a few of those lessons that you learned thanks to your mom being so creative with what she incorporated in the curriculum?
Absolutely. So one of the things that I loved the most about the way I grew up is that I feel like a lot of children who go through the government schools, they're taught to memorize. You know, they memorize something and they take a test on it and then they forget it. Whereas with me, I was taught to love to learn. And so as I was moving forward with loving to learn, you know, my mother would teach me, we would pick a history lesson, whether it was learning about the Romans or the Athenians or whatever it was. And then we would study all about it. And the way that she got us excited about it is that at the end of the year, you know, she would take us to go to Rome or to go to Athens. And now that's not possible for every single family. But I mean, she also, the way she taught me math was to go out and just hang out in the woods and stack up rocks and learn how to do multiplication tables. And you learn so much by just actually doing things where everything's not bubble wrapped, where there's actually sharp edges, where you can fall off that tree. And it was an incredible lifelong lesson that I'll never forget.
Oh, I love that so much. And I think one of the trends that we're seeing in the country, we have a little bit of time left. I want to ask you, a lot of people are shocked by the generational change that we've seen between our parents' generation and our generation. A lot of people look at us and they see 30-year-old children, right? And people used to get married around these ages and they used to have babies these ages and they're more focused on parenting. But now you see people that are our age and they're still living at their parents' house. And it's not a slight against them, but it's more so how can we get people excited that are our age about the next phase of life and what that can bring and really spark an interest in growing and building a family, building a home, getting property, and taking ownership of your life. I think the left loves the fact that we don't own things, we aren't responsible for things greater than us, and that really benefits them. So I'm curious what you would have to say to all the Gen Xer or the Gen Zers, the millennials out there that are in the between phase. Maybe they need someone to look up to, they need some guidance. What would you want them to know about what's coming for them and how this isn't the end of their life just because they're going to have to grow up?
Well, number one, I would like to apologize to them that they have been sold a scam. I think the metric for success of good parenting to a lot of the Gen Xers who raised the millennial generation was, can I get them to a four-year degree college? And, you know, the fact that an 18-year-old can't take out a $10,000 business loan but can take out a $100,000 student loan, I think tells you everything you can need to know. Because when you take out that $100,000 student loan, you owe so much money to whichever lender you have that's federally guaranteed that then you can never actually own a home. You're an eternal renter. And so I would say fight against that. When you actually own the dirt that you live on, when you actually have children that you're raising to be able to raise the next generation, then you actually do give a damn about the financial security and validity of our country. You actually do care about exactly what's going on in culture, what they're being taught in schools. And then when you realize that this country is facing very true enemies in the form of the Communist Party in China, facing very great world powers, our country needs to get stronger, and the only way we can do that is if we actually take ownership of it and say, we're not going to wait until we're 50 years old. We're going to change it right now. So I encourage all my friends, take ownership of your life.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your time, Congressman. We really appreciate it. I learned a lot, and I hope everybody out there did too. Thank you.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.